Well, like I just said, Seattle's under duress, according to its mayor, Jenny Durkin. This happening yesterday as she announced Carmen Best as the new chief of police of Seattle PD after being interim police chief now for several months. And the she wasn't even a finalist a couple of weeks ago. Brian Soutier in for the Jason Ranch Show on AM 770 KTTH. And I guess just to explain some of the ground rules on this, I have loads and loads of friends currently Seattle PD. Some of them are a year away from retirement. Some of them are years away from retirement. And I used to do a thing where they could email me, and they still can. They know they can. They know they can contact me. darksecretplace@protonmail.com. And they're all smart enough to not use a Seattle City computer. So you don't get that seattle.ci.gov or whatever, because they are tracing you. And I could read their comments and possibly even pass them on anonymously. That's not fair. I'm being dead serious about this. I have these messages. I'm keeping them to myself. It's not fair. And here's the reason I say this is because those of us who've been around Seattle media for a while know Carmen Best. Carmen Best was in the Seattle PD media relations team for a long time. She did the number one thing you have to do to represent a police department. She was available. She was very, very good at that. And so she's going to get, this is where, if Jenny Durkin has done anything smart, this might be it. Because the Seattle PD public image seems to be driven by how Seattle media choose to portray Seattle PD. And Carmen Best has been a really, really good representative of Seattle PD. She's well-liked amongst the media. And now... And I don't know if Jenny Durkin talked to other West Coast mayors about this, but there's an immediate effect that, and I'm going to just lay my cards on the table, and because this is a objective fact. Carmen Best is a very articulate, very intelligent, multi-decade experienced officer in the Seattle Police Department. She is also a female of color. She is a black woman who's been wearing the badge for decades. And the an effect that has been noticed specifically here on the West Coast is that when departments that were previously under fire or under intense media scrutiny name a minority or specifically minority female as their police chief, the intensity of the scrutiny and the intensity of public protest after, for instance, a officer-involved shooting involving a minority suspect is attenuated significantly. Okay, you have, you know, at the high tide, you know perhaps you have the Gil Kerlikowskis, you have the white male standing there at a podium defending Seattle police officers, which is the job of a police chief, and assuring the public that procedures will be followed and, you know, et cetera, and that it'll be, things will be investigated. I'm simply assuming that you all know what I know. And that is, in all the day-to-day operations of Seattle PD, Tacoma PD, Everett PD, everyone's PD, Bellevue PD, you don't see that, it never leads the news that Bellevue PD returned a lost wallet to an 81-year-old man. That's always at the end of the news. And finally, out of Bellevue, a real heartwarming story. And so, but the stories that lead the news are what? An officer-involved shooting. And is it when Seattle police shoots Honky McGill? No. But across the country, across the United States of America, police kill white males in greater numbers than anyone else. White men are being aired out left and right. And you know what? That sometimes doesn't make the news. And you know why? Usually they're shot because they did stupid S. Okay. Because they did something real stupid. Like they brought a knife to a gunfight or they brought a gun to a gunfight. In general, officer involved shootings because of training and experience are overwhelmingly upheld because they're overwhelmingly authorized use of deadly force. Okay. But we've seen a phenomenon in America over the past, let's call it 8 years, 9, 10 years, that any and all police shootings involving especially a white cop and a minority victim or suspect automatically become racist, include up to and including this ridiculous display in Chicago, where 4 to 5 people are killed per weekend by civilians, killed by other civilians who look like them, and there's no protests. But Chicago police interact with a guy who everybody knows has a gun, who apparently in the neighborhood is a known thug. Everyone knows he's a bad guy. He's such a bad guy, he's walking around with a gun.
We like to go fast, and we won't stop you.
That's my bad. Because he doesn't care if he interacts with police. He interacts with police, reaches for the gun. It's on a body camera. He gets shot. He's dead. And the protests that started over the weekend trickle off because it sure looks like it was a justified officer-involved shooting. Meanwhile, Chicago can get back to killing itself. So the net effect, and this is in a discussion I had with before he went on duty this morning with a friend of mine, is that since the police chief, and let's just get over it, the police chief is not really out there patrolling the streets, not in Seattle, not in a city the size of Seattle, not in Portland, okay, not in Bellevue. If the police chief is out patrolling, there's something either something's gone horribly wrong, or you're in Port Townsend, okay? And so the police chief is the public face of the police department. And so while it's really easy to say, well, Carmen Best doesn't have the street smarts, or how many felony arrests does she have, and all that, that's not a marker. That's not a metric of success of a police chief. And in departments, specifically in the West Coast, that have named, and I'm gonna compare apples to apples, black female chiefs, the volume of protest when an officer-involved shooting happens is a tenth of what it is normally. As long as you're proactive. And so I didn't know, you know, I'll be honest with you. So I'm not following the selection of the next Seattle police chief. I didn't know that Carmen Best was not, 3 weeks ago, was not even nominated. But anyway, she is a new police chief. And the mayor of Seattle says that Seattle's a city under duress. And of course, she accepts no responsibility for that. This is what she said. We have it at mynorthwest.com. This city is under a lot of duress right now, Durkin said. Seattle is a hard place to live, and listening to community and helping our officers deal with that changing city, I think my judgment needed somebody who understands community, understands Seattle, and understands what the growth has done to the job of being a police officer. And if you've been following Jason Rant's ongoing updates about the exodus of Seattle police officers, and which, I, by the way, I can validate. He's got his own sources. Yeah, independent sources, independent of each other, talking about this. I can validate anecdotally that two guys I know, career Seattle PD, they're speeding up their retirement. They want to pop smoke and get to Idaho before the snow falls because the city of Seattle under Durkin's leadership is a bit adrift, one could say, because she's. Lording over a city that has decided to begin tolerating all kinds of excesses, specifically from one segment of the population, the homeless. Okay, and you all recall the civility laws. Remember, Seattle took a pretty important step, and I'm talking under some very liberal mayors that made it a violation for a homeless person to actively panhandle, to stand in front of you, to get aggressive. Remember that? Seattle has always been a livable city because the police were always in charge. Even on horseback or mountain bikes with their little shorts over at Seattle Center and the whole thing, they're in charge. That's really, really important because when you start setting the tone for an environment where the police are not in charge, you know what you have? It's called San Francisco, and that's unlivable. You want to talk about duress? That's San Francisco. Okay, luckily in Seattle, it's still illegal to poop on the sidewalk. And what's more, you might get a ticket and you might be detained for it. And so that's because police are in charge. Jenny Durkin has effectively taken Seattle police and just made them another bystander, only, you know, with a slightly better handgun. That's what she's done. The prior chief, one of the most unpopular moves any chief can ever make is to come into office and declare a new uniform. Remember the old Seattle PD uniforms, the light blue and the dark blue pants? That's the last thing you want to do to your cops is, hey, heads up, guys and gals, you need to drop about $1,500 in the next couple months because here's the drop dead date on our new uniform. I get the feeling because Carmen Best was affected by that, and she'll never confirm this, but one gets the feeling that because she was affected by the uniform change, that she's probably not going to do that now that everyone's outfitted in the all dark blue. But so anyway, Carmen Best is the new police chief. You're probably going to hear a lot of dirt, a lot of that kind of, you know, how many felony arrests did she make and all that. You know, the important thing is a police chief is not chasing down. The last guy in charge to chase down a dirtbag, Dave Reichert, 1999. Does everyone remember that? December 99, the last cop to chase someone down on foot was Dave Reichert because he was Batman. We'll be back in just a second. Some more stuff happening versus Tacoma versus Seattle. What city's residents feel the most stress about the city that they live in? The answer when we come back. Plus, more opera inspired by Ruth Bader Ginsburg. It's a real thing. We'll get to that right after this. Brian Zutz filling in for Jason Rantz on the Jason Rantz Show, AM 770 KTTH. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. Brian Zutz filling in for Jason Rantz. He's on the vacation, AM 770 KTTH. I don't want to topic meld, but we have an interesting study about what list of cities in America do you make $100,000 or more and still feel like you don't have any disposable income or even feel broke? And Seattle and Portland figuring that. Portland's kind of a surprise, to be honest with you, but Seattle shouldn't be. Seattle, we're learning today for the third year in a row, Seattle leads the country in construction cranes. And this has been a feature now for, it seems like, about a decade at South Lake Union. But anyway, Seattle leads the United States in the leasing of construction cranes. And that indicates that, guess what? New construction, people are moving in. People with kids are leaving. And so anyway, what does that do for stress for Seattleites? Here's the thing. They're defining Seattle as the actual city of Seattle, not the Seattle area. The Emerald City is a bustling place, but apparently living in Seattle is less stressful than those who live in its neighbor to the south, Tacoma. Wallet Hub went out to determine the most and least stressful cities in America, and the Puget Sound region gets mixed results. And this shouldn't be a surprise. 180 cities across the U.S. were ranked. Where did Tacoma hit? Tacoma was in the upper third at number 55. Where's Seattle? Out of 180 cities, Seattle is number 133 in the bottom third. What are the factors? The study considered 37 factors, but didn't weigh them all equally. Average weekly work hours, commute time, income growth, financial stresses, divorce rates, child care costs, smoking rates, crime rates, and general overall health of its residents. And then this boils down into four major categories: work stress, financial stress, family stress, health stress. And the 25 factors they did that they did not do, essentially Seattle outscored Tacoma in 19 of the others, but they were sort of some of the silly ones. What it does not rate is, and I mean, I can tell you this personally, is looking out your car window and seeing mountains and lovely mountains and clouds and ocean and all that. I mean, really, honestly, no matter where you go, there's not really a lot of strikeout areas in Seattle. Not like there were years ago. You know, when you get off work, you're in the Pacific Northwest. And if you've never left the Pacific Northwest, let me just tell you, from me to you, kind of a big effing deal. Okay. Just take my word for that. However, in the Pacific Northwest, I don't know that I would sentence condemn anyone to Tacoma. I mean, and the deal is, this is better Tacoma than it used to be. I mean, the actual downtown of Tacoma, from the auto museum up north, it's not like it used to be. It's it and also I've got a good friend who when he got out of the Army, he started working in Fort Lewis for General Dynamics. They bought a starter house, sort of, I want to say, like in DuPont or something. And they were from his wife, I think. She was a local, but he's from the Bay Area. They bought a really cool house in one of the old neighborhoods, one of the hills in Tacoma. And I mean, if you recall, it was one of those neighborhoods where 20 years ago, it was the gangs versus off-duty Army Rangers, like in gunfights and stuff. It was South Hill, really nasty neighborhood. Tacoma has turned a corner. Okay, there's nice neighbors. There's some really cool old houses. If you're ever driving around Greenwood or Maple Leaf in Seattle, and you see those cool old neighborhoods, or some of the remaining neighborhoods in Ballard, and you say, "Wow, well, I wish that resident would die already so I could buy that house," or "Man, how come I didn't get in 10 years ago? How come I didn't get in the ground floor there 15 years ago, whatever?" Those houses still exist in Tacoma, but the people of Tacoma are still far more stressed than the people of Seattle. So yeah. I sense that traffic is a huge, huge part of it.
I'll stand up for Tacoma. It's an awesome place, and it's getting so much cooler. And, you know,
you're going to get shanked at your next family reunion.
There's lots of great bars and restaurants on Pack Ave downtown.
Yeah.
And the North End is one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. The Stadium District is growing. And if you've ever been to Frisco Freeze, it's best burger in the state.
Yeah, no one has. No, that's not true though. But I'll let you have your opinion. That's a cute opinion. but let me ask you this though. What's the source of stress? What in Tacoma makes people more stressed in Seattle?
I can't figure it out, other than those, like, you know, you said divorce and things like that are in consideration here. I can't speak to that, but and job growth, I can imagine, would be there's less to look up to or to look forward to in Tacoma in those jobs, because there's not as much corporations,
unless you're
a headquarters, as there are in Seattle. Seattle, yeah. Your jobs are always kind of growing at, like, Nordstrom and Amazon. There's always another tier to reach to.
And now, I don't want to spoiler alert here, but in the Pacific Northwest, and let's call it Idaho to Forks, to Grants Pass, Oregon, out of all the major cities, what is the least stressful city in the Pacific Northwest? It's number 166 out of 188 in the country.
I do not know. That's Boise?
It starts with a B.
Boise?
Bing, bing, bing. Boise, Idaho is apparently the least stressful place in the Pacific, in 166, least stressful in the Pacific Northwest, but one of the least stressful in the U.S., and I bet I know why. But anyway, we'll be back in just a second. It is the Jason Rand Show. We'll give you what's trending, our big local, when we come back. AM 770 KTTH.
The big local is brought to you by Tulalip Resort Casino.
Yelp, Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the big local on the Jason Rand Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
AM 770 KTTH, the Jason Rance Show. Brian sits filling in for Jason this week. He's on vacation. I am in all week from a very stressful place, I should say, way up on the list. Checking in on stories locally, not involving opera albums about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, unless of course producer Darren wants to hear a little opera written by Ruth Bader Ginsburg's daughter-in-law, but I'm not going to play it on my own. But if you want to hear it, I have it just ready to go. Gun-toting Edmonds council member proposes fines for not locking up firearms. In the state of Washington, you may have a firearm in your house loaded. I think you'll find they're a lot more effective when they are ready to be used. You should be storing it responsibly. By storing it responsibly, I mean, if you have kids in the house, it shouldn't be in their reach. It should perhaps be locked away or whatever. If you don't have kids in the house, if you don't have kids or border collies, and you have some stupid breed of dog, and you don't have kids, you know what? It's no skin off anyone's nose if you have a loaded weapon at your bedside or whatever, okay? That the guy in Ballard did it on Sunday, and it worked out just fine for him, I think. I don't know. But anyway, up in Edmonds, a fine for not locking up firearms might put a pinch in your groove on this one. The city of Edmonds could soon fine people who don't lock up their firearms. The ordinance is being proposed, in fact, by a gun owner. Mike Nelson is the president of the Edmonds City Council. He has two sons in grade school. He is a proud gun owner. Nelson is introducing legislation Tuesday that would require all gun owners to use a trigger lock or safe. He said since the mass shooting in Parkland, Florida this year, he's received a lot of pressure to pass gun laws, especially from young people. So he's caving in. They're afraid to go to school because they're afraid of getting shot. And so as a parent, that really struck a chord with me because I don't want my baby going and feeling that way. They should be going there to learn. They shouldn't be going there to be afraid. That's a place that should be of safety. Those who did not safely store their firearms would face a civil infraction and a fine of $500. If a gun that was not correctly stored is used in a crime, the fine could jump to $10,000. I'm for that. You know, I've got no problem with that. I mean, if the crime is murder, by the way. But anyway, Nelson dismisses the criticism that it's unfair to be required to buy a lock or safe. Well, he's wrong. It is unfair. But anyway, he says, for the cost of a Happy Meal, you can literally save somebody's life. A trigger lock is very, very inexpensive and all that. And I always, anytime someone hides behind gun ownership and says, oh, don't get me wrong, I'm a gun owner or whatever, but we have to implement common sense laws. So here's this is not just, you know, big local. This is kind of big local stupid. My test is always, are you reacting to something? Yes, the Nicholas Cruz Parkland, Florida high school shooting. Okay, what are you proposing? Firearms locks. How would that have stopped that last shooting? Great point, Brian. The Nicholas Cruz owned the weapon. He legally purchased an AR-15. As it turns out, there were laws on the books in Florida and in that county, and what a bang-up job that sheriff has done, by the way. There were laws just not only in that county but in that state that that could have and should have prevented Nicholas Cruz from purchasing the weapon. Because here's another young guy, here's another middle-class young white kid who was on psychotropic drugs since he was 13, Russian orphan, which is kind of a code word for fetal alcohol syndrome, if you look at his picture. The kid was acting out since he was 13 or 14. Police called to domestic disputes. If you don't know this, in a DV situation, somebody has to leave in handcuffs if it's a married couple or a couple sharing a house, even if they're not married. The only scenario where someone's not taken away in handcuffs is if it's siblings. Because brothers and sisters and brothers fight all the time, right? So that's why Nicholas Cruz didn't have more arrests on his record. But nevertheless, there were legal, there are things on the books in Florida that should have prevented him from getting that weapon. He had psychological outcomes that he should have checked yes on his ATF form 4473 when he bought the weapon. But regardless, okay, a lot of factors led to Nicholas Cruz, not the least of which that his father died when he was, whatever, 5 or 6. Then his mother just died. His mother, the woman who was hand-feeding him his Adderall every day, died of pneumonia last year. And he moves in with some family, though, I guess the last ones, the ones who drew the short straw, and the guy was a ticking time bomb. So why not the ticking time bomb ordinance for the city of Edmonds? It should be illegal to be a ticking time bomb. How about that one? Because the guy owned the weapons that he used. If you'd required him to own a trigger lock for that, it would have slowed the shooting down by, what, 2 seconds? I don't know. He Ubered to the frickin' high school. So before you come at me with more laws, why not enforce the ones that are on the books? And also, you know what? Here's the deal. And I don't want to, you know, waste this entire break on one story. But whenever I hear gun stupidity like this by someone who's hiding behind the fact that they're this is according to a local NPR quote, and he's a proud gun owner. Okay, well, you know what? Maybe a little education on your part with your kid, your grade school kid. You know, I have a grade school kid, and she has been on lockdown several times. We had a deputy shot and killed, a 30-plus year veteran, shot by a dirtbag who was just released from prison, because that's what we do in California. We release the a-holes, and he shot a deputy, a beloved local guy, So she was on lockdown for the day on that. We explained to her what happened. What I explained to my daughter, what I explained to everybody who will listen is folks, there's not a gun violence epidemic. Okay. Gun violence is on a 30-year decline. Thing one. Thing two, you can't catch it from me and I can't catch it from you. Yet, oddly enough, with gun violence at a near historic low, gun ownership is up. There's 330 million people in America. There's nearly one gun per person. With more guns, the violence has gone down. So work that out. Try to run that through your liberal thought process and then come back and tell me that guns are the problem. Because there's more guns and there's less violence. Suicide now leads homicide. It used to be 3-1, homicides to suicides 30 years ago. There are now more suicides. Yet what they do, because they're desperate to suppress the fact that violent homicides are down with firearms, what they do is they'll say gun violence, because that way you can fold suicide in there. Okay, all right. I don't know what to tell you about suicide. I have a guy I served with. A guy, there's many of you out there listening who were with me in Iraq in 161 Infantry. You know who I'm talking about. A guy, a great guy who came home and in Bellevue killed himself. I wish he hadn't done that, but I don't know that if you'd taken away his guns, it wouldn't have been another method. I don't know what to say about guns used for suicide. So people use knives and all sorts of stuff every single day. I don't think taking guns away lowers the suicide rate. However, that being said, you know what you do if you have grade school kids? You explain to them that the chances, even Michael Bloomberg in New York admits this, the chances of being involved in a mass shooting are far less than being struck by lightning, like the kids on the Pacific Crest Trail. Wait, I'll play that audio in the next break. Far less than being involved in a car accident. And that's the reality of it. Why do they feel justified in saying epidemic? Well, it's because in general, we live in a more peaceful, prosperous era than any other era in American history. With more media, and media needs content. And so every murder, every cop shooting, everything gets 10 times the attention it would have gotten or deserved getting 20 years ago. We had a president who spent 8 years dealing with local law enforcement issues. You know, I mean, look, regardless of the circumstances, bottom line, the Trayvon Martin shooting was a local law enforcement issue. Okay, not everything requires a president to jump in on, but that's how we are today because we have a news void. So no, there's not a firearms homicide, even in Edmonds. And what you're proposing, Council President Nelson, would not have stopped the Parkland shooting. So why would you propose a frivolous law? If you want to make a different case and say something about in cities where guns are locked up, okay, then make that case. But don't say, oh, this is in response to Parkland. But why don't you ban people named Nicholas? How about try that after the fact? We'll be back in just a second. Some young men on the Pacific Crest Trail in a tale of survival. Man versus electricity. When we come back, it is Brian Tutfillian for Jason Rantz on the Jason Rantz Show, AM 770 KTTH. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. Brian Tutfillian in for Jason Rantz on AM 770 KTTH. Next hour, we're going to check in with John Decker from Fox News to find about the political fallout from Helsinki and conservative writer George Will going a month out from calling for a outright defeat of the GOP this November, loss of Congress. He wants destruction and rebuilding of the Republican Party. He was on Morning Joe this morning, the president tweeting at that time. So there's clearly some political fallout happening in Congress. And yesterday, the president, air fingers, clarifying what he said about why would Russia do it, meaning try to interfere with the election. And that turns out he meant to say why. No, I'm sorry. he said, why wouldn't Russia? Why wouldn't it be Russia? It was a double negative. He said, why wouldn't it be Russia? That's what he clarified. That's what he meant to say. But instead, he said, why would Russia do it? So we'll get to John Decker. It is also standing by for those of you who are saying, you know, in these dark, dark times, what we need more than anything else is someone writing an opera based on Ruth Bader Ginsburg. What's more, her daughter-in-law is actually a soprano in Chicago. Her daughter-in-law, married to Ruth Bader Ginsburg's son, James, who is a record producer, has produced an album based on Ruth Bader Ginsburg's life. And you know what? If I'm going to do this kind of a walk-up, Darren, I can't wait for you to say yes. I just got to play it at this point. I can't tease it like this. So the album is called The Notorious RBG, A Life in Song, even though I don't believe she's ever sung a note in her life. But this is her daughter-in-law, and this is the catchy tune called What Should a President Look For in a Supreme Court Justice? Just listen along. This will put a bounce in your step this morning.
What qualities should a president seek in a Supreme Court Justice?
Not exactly Verdi, but so anyway, there we go. Locally, because I just was monologuing like a Bond villain about the, quote, epidemic of gun violence and all that, I didn't get a chance to play this. But three brothers from California are on the Pacific Crest Trail at the north end of the Pacific Crest Trail. The final leg of it, it crosses over Highway 2 at Skykomish and stays in the Cascades. This is that time of year when you get those wacky summer storms up in the Cascades. And I know that from the time we lived in Monroe, we were right at the foothills. We're halfway between Monroe and Sultan. And you'd see those storms that, like, if you live in Redmond, you look east and there's nothing. It's a clear sky. Half an hour later, there's these gray clouds and you're seeing lightning up in the mountains. So these guys are, I guess, a couple days ago, are way up on the Pacific Crest Trail. And this is from our good friends at King 5. And out of nowhere, as it tends to come, lightning strikes.
Three boys from California are lucky to be alive.
And as you'll hear, the lightning, as it turns out, completely and totally harshes their mellow.
Five tonight after getting hit by lightning near Skykomish. They were hiking the Pacific Crest Trail when a storm hit last week. They scrambled for cover when the lightning moved in. This is video of the aftermath. One of the brothers was thrown 15 feet, knocked unconscious. His oldest brother had to revive him. They wound up hiking 60 miles to get to a doctor. Fortunately, everyone is okay.
Dude, you should see my other shirt. These are my shorts.
Okay.
This is my jacket. It's all fried up. And my other shirt.
And by the way, he dropped an S-bomb there because this is just their own. This is their video that they're gonna put up. But I'll say this: the guy's pants are shredded. I mean, really, really shredded. And this is apparently right after the lightning struck. They're showing the tree, and it looks like, you know, it looks like the world's biggest cougar, which you'd probably think would be me. But a gigantic animal with claws strips this bark down. And these guys are legit burned and shredded. The kid who's showing his pants, it looks like someone took a knife to his inner thigh.
60 miles to get to a doctor. Fortunately, everyone is okay.
Dude, you should see my other shirt. These are my shorts. This is my jacket. It's all fried up and my other shirt was all melted.
Tonight, the boys are continuing their trip on the Pacific Coast Trail.
Okay. Thailand, Schmiland. All right. What we're finding out today, you heard the news earlier that the 12 Thai cave boys were warned by their parents not to go in the cave. Their parents specifically said, this is the time of year when the cave fills up with water, which I think you'll find is not conducive to the breathing. So why don't you guys not go in that cave and just go over there and be the whatever they were, the Wild Boars, whatever the name of their soccer team was. Go over there and play the soccer. Run around and kick that ball. Whatever you do, don't pick it up and run with it because that would be a far superior game. So go over there and go play soccer. And then we spend whatever it was, 9 days and a full 15 days. Elon Musk ruins his reputation by calling somebody a pedophile. Big kerfuffle about this entire thing. Meanwhile, what about these three guys? I mean, I got to say, that is badass. These three brothers on the Pacific Crest Trail, zonked by lightning. There's no meta. They didn't spend a dollar on Whatcom County search and rescue or anything, or Snohomish County. I'm sorry, it's up Highway 2. It's Eastern Snohomish County. They didn't spend a buck of our tax dollars in search and rescue. They self-evacuated after being hit by lightning. And now they're back at the Pacific Crest Trail. They have no clue that this made it in the news or whatever. Why aren't these guys, you know, the American heroes of the day? And so someone get the hell up to the border, to the north end. Don't let them get into Canada. But no, that is cool. They and by the way, they were hit by lightning. They could have come down to Skykomish, called mommy and daddy, and said, get us the hell out of here, bro, dad. My jacket's like fried in junk. They didn't. They went back on the trail. So, hey, 12 Thai kids in the cave. You just sat there for 9 days. Let's be honest, okay? These dudes are back in the Pacific Crest Trail after hiking 60 miles for medical care. Then they get back on the trail. So that is what I say to you. When we come back, we'll talk about the aftermath, the fallout politically in Washington, D.C. after Trump's clarification and after what he said in Helsinki. That plus more Ruth Bader Ginsburg opera, because who can say no to this? It is Brian Toots filling in for Jason Rantz on The Jason Rantz Show. Come back right after this on AM 570, AM 770 KTTH.